That I work up at on campus. I'm an assistant dean in EHHD. I'm also a doctoral candidate, hopefully graduating in May. So I'm trying to have a little self-compassion for not being fully memorized this morning. So please bear with me as I look down sometimes, and hopefully that's okay. You can have a little compassion for me. We'll just practice that back and forth. So I've been very lucky with the Compassion Project so far that I brought this kind of crazy idea to my boss in EHHD and said, you know, I think this is something that would be really cool for our college to maybe help spearhead. And she said yes. So basically she has folded it under my job duties, which is awesome. I also spend more time at the office than I used to, but that's okay. I get to do things like this during the day. I get to have meetings during the day with my awesome board and our committees and everything like that. And I'll get more into kind of what the Compassion Project is specifically, and then there's stickers and some information in the back if you're interested in taking those. So my story begins in Ghana, where I had been fortunate enough to be the assistant dean on the Semester at Sea program. And so I sailed around the world with 550 undergraduate students in the spring of 2016. It had been my dream job for a really long time, and I was very lucky to kind of do it within my doctorate when I was really needing a break. And able to figure that out in my life. So I quit my job and I left for San Diego to sail around the world. My job on the ship was to do student discipline. So whenever students got in trouble, they came and they had to meet with me. So I heard over 150 cases in the span of about 3.5 months. So if students got in trouble in port, which was more likely, or on the ship, they had to come and meet with me, and then they got consequences or sanctions along with that. So the students really surprised me sometimes because of my job. They surprised me in some of those not so great ways. Like, really, what were you thinking? And then sometimes they surprised me in really amazing ways where they were showing compassion to each other or to people in the country, critical thinking, and just kind of that really deep reflection and understanding. So this is a photo of the Elmina slave castles, or taken from the Elmina slave castles in Ghana, where over 30,000 Ghanaians were taken through the point of no return door to become part of the slave trade in the United States. And I realize that it's a blurry picture. It certainly wasn't intentional when I was taking it, but it kind of makes sense to me as I think about compassion and how sometimes compassion is difficult to see. And in a country where the citizens could be so hardened by what has happened to them in the past, it was amazing to me to see what they had to offer and what they offered me while I was there. And so compassion is sometimes blurry, sometimes it's difficult, sometimes it's complicated, which I'll talk about as well, but sometimes it comes into focus a little bit. So like Amy said, I've traveled a lot, and I spend a lot of time writing when I'm traveling, and so first I'm gonna kind of start with a short story that I wrote when I was in Ghana and visiting one of the smaller villages. A woman carrying a large load of fruits on her head on the side of the road wipes her brow. I wonder who she is. How are we similar? We arrive in the village and are overwhelmed by hundreds of children's hands, hearts, and the overwhelming heat and humidity that is easily choked upon. We soon realize that once the sweating starts, it won't end until we're back on the ship. There is singing in the background, most likely from one of the small churches for Easter festivities. Those of us that need to use the bathroom are led to the only non-hole of a toilet in the village, and I realize later that this is the toilet that my host family will take me to as well, even though it's quite far away from the house. The elders, the queen mother, the chief, and the children are kind. There is never a moment that my hand is unheld, my lap never empty. I am connected to my host family for the night. They show me to my room, a mattress on the floor. Looks perfect, I say, as I wonder who I'm putting out for the night. They ask several times if I need someone to sleep in the room with me, if it's okay for me to sleep alone. It's very sweet, but I assure them that I'll be okay. The children of the house take me on a village tour, fighting back and forth about who gets to hang onto my hand versus my arm versus who gets to lead the way. Who will take my camera to take a photo? Who gets to talk over one another to explain that this is their grandfather's garden, that this is what a cassava plant looks like? That I shouldn't pay attention to those men over there that are calling to me. They're dangerous, they say. Stay safe with us. And I feel safer than I ever have with these children by my side. We play games in the park, play drums in the church, and dance in the bar for all of 3 minutes. But they love showing me their lives, their people, their normal, and I feel humbled by it. We meet in the morning, and a child I haven't seen yet, maybe 4 years old, quietly puts his arm around my chair as I wait for breakfast. He's just content to be there. Another arrives on the other side, and yet another from yesterday who reminded me last night that she would see me tomorrow. It's hard to leave, but the smiles and waves and kindness and compassion will travel with us. So many of us are reminded of our privilege, others reminded of what is important and why. We are sweaty, salty, tired, dehydrated, and content. A student tells me that she's never been so physically uncomfortable before and also never smiled so much. Amazing. That is what this is all about. My sister lives in D.C., and last January, at the very last minute, I decided to fly to D.C. to march in the Women's March. It's okay if you don't agree with my marching. It's okay if you do. But it's where my story of the Compassion Project kind of begins. I took family and friends, that picture on the left side, with me in the form of love on my arm. So I put out a call on Facebook to people to say, hey, I'm going. If for some reason you want to march and you're not able to, either through illness or whatever, let me know and I'll find a way to represent you on my body. So that's what I did, as I brought them with me. We had become an outward country divided, and while I don't think that we were ever fully united, the election had brought issues to light that really kind of had always been there and still are there. Whatever side, quote unquote, that you were on in the election, the point was is that there were sides, and there still are. And there were sides within those sides. I lose my power there. Okay. And all I could stop thinking about was Vanilla Ice's Stop, Collaborate, and Listen, because I think that's what we needed to do to be able to kind of move forward. After returning from marching with my sister, I needed to find a purpose in the divide. And the biggest motivation to the Compassion Project actually came from the march when we had just turned onto Pennsylvania Avenue. We were marching past the Trump Hotel, and all of a sudden middle fingers just flew into the air. And I looked over at the hotel, and there was a group of five younger women that were part of the march, and they were looking up at a fifth floor window where there were three young children in the window. And the women below were screaming, "We hate you." And I still regret not saying anything to those women, because that was not what that was supposed to be about. Sometimes compassion is easy. Showing simple kindness, holding a door, smiling at someone, offering simple kindness when you certainly don't have to, making someone laugh. This is a photo of my tour guide when I was traveling in Tibet when I was a Peace Corps volunteer in China. Unbeknownst to us, my friend and I that were traveling, the driver and our guide had stopped and gotten small toys and candy and school supplies, because he knew that as we were driving towards Everest that there would be these people along the road that would be counting on those things. So he would stop probably once an hour along the road and hand out these candies and these school supplies, and it was clear that they counted on that piece of compassion for their livelihoods. Sometimes compassion is really difficult. South Africa was one of the ports that we stopped at, and the picture on the right is in Robben Island in Nelson Mandela's cell, where he was imprisoned for 27 years for apartheid. And on the left is one of my most cherished possessions. Desmond Tutu actually sailed on the ship with us for about a week, and so I got to meet him, and this was his note to me. So I guess I was just so impressed by both Mandela and Tutu's ability to still have leadership and kindness and compassion and lead their country through and out of apartheid in South Africa when no doubt it was incredibly difficult to do. They gave kindness and compassion in the face of division, adversity, and hate, and arguably a time when it was needed most. Something that the Archbishop lives by is, and he taught us about this while we were on the ship, was this concept of Ubuntu. And maybe you've heard of this term, maybe you haven't, but basically Ubuntu means the belief that we are defined by our compassion and kindness towards others. And his friends call him Arch, so that's what we got to call him. But he says that all of our humanity is dependent upon recognizing the humanity in others. I always think that there's really true beauty in that, that you are because I am, and I am because you are. Sometimes compassion hurts and is joyous at the same time, and sometimes that's when it's the most beautiful. My sister, pictured on the left here, lived in Jordan on a Bourne scholarship to study Arabic for a year. And before we went over to visit her, my mom, who was a social worker in the emergency room at the time, gathered all sorts of collections of baby clothes for the refugees that were living there from Syria and Palestine. But then she also gathered dolls for this school for the blind that my sister had been volunteering at for a year. So this is a photo of my sister and my mom handing out those dolls. There were lots of tears, some tears of sadness, but also a lot of tears of happiness as we listened to them talk about my sister, which was absolutely incredible. The three of us traveled together a lot. They have been to probably half, if not a little bit more, of those countries that Amy mentioned before with me. And we argue sometimes about silly things, sometimes about our personal relationships. We often argue about graffiti and if it's actually giving a voice to people who need hope or if it's just vandalism. That has been my my take for a long time until recently when we had a conversation. But some things are constant when we travel. I always drive if there's a rental car. My sister always sleeps in the back. We carry the bags and mom does all of our laundry in the sink. I describe my sister as human. She's the most human person I know. She gets that from my mom. She gives without question. She lives with conviction. Kindness and compassion are second nature. She buys socks for her homeless clients in DC, and she gives me hope. And I get to go see her this afternoon. So I'm very excited. So this is on the Palestinian side of the wall. And this was right after one of our arguments about graffiti. Clearly, here it is a place where people get hope from graffiti, and it's a voice when people don't necessarily have a voice within their own society. And so I think my sister won that one, and I walked away with a different perspective, a more critical lens, and probably a new understanding of my sister. Sometimes, compassion is about others. This fellow on the left had fashioned this luggage device in Dubrovnik, Croatia at his Airbnb so that his guests didn't have to walk down steep and awful steps with all of their luggage. And you can see he's not exactly a super young man, but he's willing to help his clients and his people in any way possible. And one of my family members was having a particularly difficult time when we were in Croatia, and so that was a godsend to get there and to not have to carry all of our luggage down ridiculous steps. On the right are some of my students when I was in China, and they made sure that I wasn't alone on my first Christmas there. Sometimes it's important to make compassion about you. Self-compassion is sometimes about balance. Sometimes it's about being patient or holding space for yourself when things are difficult. It's important to put ourselves first sometimes. Human-to-human compassion, I believe, starts with self-compassion because we can't help others from an empty tank. So I climb mountains, and that's me climbing mountains in China, but I try and get up as much as I can here. I climb mountains not to only help myself, but to continue to be able to help others and to kind of get out some of that stuff that you need to and get some exercise as well. Find time to do things for yourself. Make space for it. You can't help others from an empty tank, like I said. Realize that sometimes you'll do things that make you want to scream at yourself, like this flat tire in Ireland, because, well, parallel parking on the other side is a little bit difficult. Sometimes there's an overlap of compassion between you and others. When I was in the Peace Corps, I was told that I would get so much more out of my experience in my 2.5 years than I would give to my students. And I spent 2.5 years trying to make that not true, but I walked away with quite a bit. I taught freshman nursing students at a medical college in northwestern China, and I walked away with a whole lot of new knowledge, new compassion, new understanding and memories of this little guy who's also a little bit blurry, but who I taught little snippets of English to, and he taught me little snippets of Chinese, which is what he's doing on my birthday, hence the crown. On the right-hand side is at an orphanage in Myanmar during the semester at Sea Experience too, and this was one of my favorite students who was having lots of fun giving love and tickles and compassion to the kids at the orphanage. That one's also a little bit blurry, and I think about that as I have considered the idea of volunteerism, but that's probably a topic for a different day. It's funny because I gave this presentation to a friend yesterday, asking for their feedback if there was anything I needed to change, and she made the note that all of my examples, every single one of them, have to do with children. And I feel like I need to address that. It's usually easy to give kids compassion. If there are parents in the room, you may disagree that it's not always easy, but I don't know. I've never had kids. They haven't yet learned about conditional love, and hopefully they haven't yet learned about hate. They aren't ingrained in their beliefs and values to the point of attack on their beliefs, maybe an attack on their essence. I get it, and I compare it to dating in my 30s. If I'm not willing to change, then how can I expect someone else to? A child probably hasn't hurt you. A child probably isn't going to argue their political points with you for an hour, but maybe they will. A child isn't going to make you question your own essence. It's easier to not only be compassionate towards, but also to teach kids about compassion. So we as adults have to work harder to be more mindful, but also intentional. We've learned about heartbreak and loss and consequences. We may even know lost friendships or family because of recent political stuff. I do. Even on days and weeks when it's really difficult, I believe that compassion is necessary for everyone, not just for children, especially in today's climate. So maybe we can not only teach kids about the importance of compassion, because hopefully that will create a ripple effect, which I'm hoping to do with the Compassion Project, but maybe we can also commit to making our community more compassionate for each other, for adults and kids alike, and that leads me to the Compassion Project. So with what I've kind of learned and experienced in the past 10 months, 11 months, in tandem with the division that I've seen and amplified recently, this is really what motivated me towards the Compassion Project in Bozeman. I was at a presentation the other day where a speaker made the comment that there is a large gap between hope and habit, and the Compassion Project was the way of me to make that shift into being more action-oriented. I believe that hope isn't everything. I believe it's important, but I don't believe that it's everything, and that essentially action is the thing that will actually create positive change. The Compassion Project is something that I saw when I was home in Wisconsin. There's a book that was going around earlier that kind of shows what that looks like. But my mom brought me to a gallery where you walked in and there were over 6,000 of these small kind of tiles. They used canvas. We're going to use wood, which I'll talk about in a second, but thousands of them, floor to ceiling, of where kiddos had learned about what it means to be compassionate, what it looks like, how to recognize it, how to practice it yourself. And then they had artistically created something that showed what compassion looked like. So you walked in and each little piece had kind of a little number so you could carry around the packet of information and read all of the artist statements, some of which are in that book. One of my favorites is, compassion is giving someone your chicken nuggets. You know, the way kids think. But it was just, it was amazing walking around and seeing how people had kind of come together to talk about compassion. And as you were reading the artist statements, basically you just walked around this gallery and cried because it was so impactful. So this is kind of what it looked like in Wisconsin. And the top one is from the Appleton Compassion Project, and the bottom one is from La Crosse, which is the one that I saw. And every single participant in Bozeman will get something similar to this. Like I said, they used canvases. We're going to use a little bit bigger block. Our team kind of felt like wood was a little bit more Montana. It was a little bit more resourceful and a little bit cheaper. And it doesn't necessarily squelch creativity, which is what some of our artist friends said, so that they could paint on it, they can burn it, they can carve it, they could write a poem or take a photograph and Mod Podge it on there. So we'll see what teachers decide to do. And it's not a mandate here, but I present to the school district at the end of this month to kind of let them know what we've come up with for our curriculum and to start getting teachers to hopefully opt in. We have some principals and some teachers on our team that we think it won't be mandated, but hopefully most, if not all, teachers will actually opt into the project. So this is how our team we had a retreat this summer, and this is how we are defining compassion for us. As mindful support, relief, and genuine human kindness for others, ourselves, and our environment. The beauty in compassion is that everyone needs it, and those that don't act like they do or those that we want to give it to the least probably need it the most. So, I encourage all of you to choose to not be enemies despite differing beliefs. Build bridges or make hummus. and have a conversation. Even when it's difficult, find compassion, because that's how I believe that we'll begin to heal the division. Listen for understanding, not for forming your next argument. I've learned a lot. I'm not done learning. I've learned to start to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. I'm learning to have more self-compassion and remembering that just because I'm the director of this project doesn't mean that I'm going to lead a perfectly compassionate life all the time. But I'm trying. And I've certainly been challenged on that because of my job with this project. But I still work to practice compassion with those that I don't always agree with those that have hurt me, and with those that make me angry. I don't always succeed, but I try, and I encourage you all to do the same. Because we all do better when we all do better. That's it. Yes, so we have come up with curriculum that is anywhere between, we have either two lesson plans or three lesson plans of 75 minutes each. And it's up to the teachers how much time they want to give. The school district was a little bit nervous at first. They're coming around, but just because the teachers already have so much on their plates. There's a lot for them to do as far as Montana core standards and guidance counselor standards and art standards. They don't have art teachers in the K-5 classes in Bozeman, and so it makes things a little bit tricky. But we're kind of working through, our lesson plans include a visualization piece at the beginning to kind of just get students centered. And then we talk through what it means to be compassionate. They actually read something either as a class or on their own, a poem, a short story. We've got a whole list of resources that the teachers and the schools can opt into. And then the next lesson will be them actually creating the 8x8 blocks, and then we will be putting them up hopefully in between 10,000 and 15,000 of them in the spring of 2019. So we have the Emerson for some spots, we have part of the library as well, and we're always looking for more spots to probably be able. We won't know exactly how much space we need until teachers decide to opt in, hopefully by February 1st. But we'll also be doing community workshops as well at the library, at MSU, with other organizations, the cancer support community, the Y, looking at my partner, chair. Am I missing anybody, Sarah? Yes. So, I mean, anybody that would like to learn, we'll have specific community workshops that are for kids and adults, and then we'll have some that are just for adults. We're actually doing a dry run at the end of the month as well, the night before we go to the school district to just kind of test out our curriculum and see how that goes with a community workshop. And so then we'll get some feedback and see how we need to tweak things, but that's kind of what it's gonna look like. So big culmination in the spring of 19, and hopefully we'll be in the classrooms next fall and next summer. So it's coming up. But my team is awesome and they've been doing really good work. Other questions?
One place you visited where you felt the most struggle to give compassion, show compassion, and have to kind of overcome?
Oh my goodness, that's a hard question. So I did one of my master's is in counseling, and I did one of my practicums in Trinidad and Tobago, and I was placed at it was called a junior secondary school, so kind of like a middle school to high school here, like 6th through 10th grade. And something that was really difficult there was an abusive culture within the schools and within the parents. And I remember flying from Trinidad to Tobago for just like a weekend trip and thinking about all of the abuse that was happening on the ground as we were flying over. And I kind of, not made peace with it, but I kind of was able to figure out how to deal with it by realizing that this is not a problem just here. And I'm here doing a good thing with these other people that I'm traveling with to teach people about really compassion and counseling and why it's important to communicate. But it was really difficult to be in a counseling room where there were parents that I was nervous about what they were doing to their kids.
What advice do you have to those of us who really want to be, culturally sensitive when mm-hmm. we travel?
Mm-hmm. I think doing your research is really important, being aware of those things. And this is something that I struggled with, especially on semester at sea, as we talk about cultural appropriation, and that's become such a hot topic. Because everybody on semester at sea wanted to buy saris in India and wanted to buy longis in Myanmar. And, did they bring them back? And I was given a qipao in China, one of the traditional Chinese dresses. But I think doing your research, understanding what the culture is, learning a little bit of the language is really important. I always feel really guilty if I'm traveling and don't at least know how to say hello or where's the bathroom. That's one that I always have to know. That was one of the first things I learned in Chinese, that and beer. That was what my aunt taught me. But I think that it's just important to really know what you're going into and to at least make an effort to realize that you're walking into a culture that isn't your own and you're there to learn and to perhaps learn or teach when you get back. Yeah.
Do you have any like go-tos as far as acts that you like to do when you're trying to cross like a language and cultural barrier in communication? It seems really hard.
Charades is a really good game to play. I don't know if you've seen those t-shirts that are like travel where you can like point to what you need on your t-shirt. Like, I need a bathroom, I need food, I need, you know. Traveling as much as I have, I've gotten really good at charades and also trying to find someone that I know within the culture is helpful. I mean, my mom and sister and I travel together a lot, but a lot of that travel has been one of us is living somewhere and then the other two go and visit them. So that's been really helpful to, you know, for me to be able to speak Chinese or my sister to be able to speak Arabic or whatever. But I would say just, you know, practice charades and see if you can learn at least a little bit of the language before going. Even if it's not the perfect pronunciation, I've never found any culture to fault you for that. They're usually just really happy that you're trying. So, yeah.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Thanks, Katie. So when you're on MSU, have you targeted MSU students? Are you doing this compassion project with them as well?
The hope is yes. We're trying to figure out, I'm on the convocation committee, so I'm really pushing for a certain speaker that will tie in with this, although our possibilities right now, we could really make any of them work. And so that would be kind of our in with potentially the first year seminars. Yeah, I don't think that any of the seminars would mandate a project, but we could probably create curriculum for them that they could then say, okay, well maybe you can get extra credit by going out and creating the 8x8. And then we'll be doing, hopefully in the residence halls, hopefully in the sub and the student union, we'll be doing some just different types of workshops. The Leadership Institute has been a really great partner so far and they're helping out. So it won't be a mandate by any means at MSU, but my college is a very strong supporter of the project and we'll do everything that we can to get it out to as many students as we can.
A second, if I may, do you foresee the time when you would actually approach, debate or an audience that may, let's say a political gathering,
mm-hmm.
you could actually, you know, work someone through this compassion process,
mm-hmm.
or at least try to bring about, engender some compassion, you know, in a very divided time? I don't even know what.
Well, I've thought about that actually, and I've thought about that with what IM Interchange does. And I would like to talk to them a little bit more because I think they do such a nice job in bringing in people from various backgrounds to talk about different things. So it might be kind of cool to bring people in to talk about compassion. The word compassion has been interesting. It's kind of can be a negative buzzword to people that are more on the conservative side. I've talked to some people about joining our board because certainly we're not political, we're not partisan by any means. Even though that may be part of my story, that's not what it is. And it's funny when I've talked to some of those, they're like, you know, I don't know. I'm like, well, what is it about it that makes you go, I don't know if I want to be involved? And they say, oh, well, the word compassion. And that is like, to me, terrifying. Because if we have people in the world that are questioning the word compassion, like what does that say about our society? And they said, well, it's just been shoved down our throats by the far left or whatever. And so so that's been something that I've had to navigate. But I think there's hope for it. But I think that maybe with IM Interchange, there might be an opportunity to be able to do something like that. So something I've thought about. If you have other ideas, please let me know.
I wonder if yeah. those same people go to church.
So it's a fair question. Yeah.
For the project itself in Bozeman, the Gallatin Valley. Is it like a one-time thing where it's like
good question.
18-month thing or however long, or is it ongoing?
Well, so right now, we're functioning like a nonprofit, but we're not a nonprofit. We have a fiscal sponsor. Actually, the Alumni Foundation is managing all of our money, which is very helpful. but right now, it's a one-off. But I've talked to Cindy Andrus, who is our deputy mayor. She's really excited about the project, and she is the president of the Montana Arts Council, and she's also on the board for the Western Arts Council, Western States Arts Council. She's really excited about it, and she's like, okay, yeah, we do it in Bozeman as a pilot, and then we go to Montana, and then we go to the Western States, and then it's, I'm like, okay, this is gonna be my full-time job as a nonprofit director in 5 years. So it's entirely possible that it could take off. I think, as far as I know, we're the only district or city that has done it like this, the third one, because of the two in Wisconsin. So, and I should put up my contact information. I have one more slide. It really depends on how it goes. I mean, I've talked to people in Belgrade, and I've talked to people in Livingston who have said, well, what about us? We need that too. But the fundraising piece of it is a real thing. And it takes a lot of money, and unfortunately, these people are wonderful, but they don't want to be on my fundraising committee. Nobody does. It's hard to ask for money. So that is kind of a barrier to that, you know, if it went statewide, I think that we could apply for different grants, which would be awesome. But for right now, it's a one-off, and we'll kind of see how it goes. So, yeah.